Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
In fact, I think that there's a lot of similarities between like the artist mindset and the mom mindset, like as what an artist should be. An artist should sacrifice everything for their art, you know, and it's the same thing with motherhood. You're supposed to sacrifice everything for your kids. And there has to be balance. I mean, there just has to be for you to be a healthy artist, a healthy mother, a healthy human being, and be able to keep giving to your art and keep giving to your kids. You know, you can't do that when you're completely running on empty.
Erica B. Hess is a painter recognized for her use and interest in color. Her work has been exhibited nationally, including the Prince Street Gallery in New York City, Last Projects in Los Angeles, California, and the Boston Center for the Arts in Boston, MA. She is an active juror, co-founded an artist-run space in Boston called Musa Collective, and she is the creator of the popular I Like Your Work podcast. Erica is the mother to two kiddos, and I'm really excited to chat art, podcasting, and life with her today. Erica, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Kaylin, thank you so much for having me on the show. I've just really been looking forward to talking to you. So thanks for asking me to be here.
Of course. I'm so excited. It's like I get to talk podcasting with someone. Yay.
I know, right?
I can't wait. Okay. So Erica, I would love for you to start by just, giving us a brief rundown of your career so far, maybe pointing us back to something that got you interested in art in your childhood or earlier years and some high points along your journey.
Yeah, so I was, like a lot of listeners and a lot of your guests, I was always the kid in the art room making, painting on any blank surface. Mm-hmm. So my backpack, stools that were in the space. And I was really lucky that my family supported my interest in art. And when I decided to go to college, I decided that I was not going to study art because that was something I'd always done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had this sense that because it was something I was good at and I'd always kind of been doing, I should challenge myself to try something else. Hmm. And so I actually started
I don't think everybody thinks that way, Erica.
No, not that part. Not that part. Yeah. But the part of always making and creating. But yeah, yes. And that theme of always kind of trying something new, mm-hmm. Has definitely followed me for better or worse.
Mm-hmm. And challenging yourself. I like that.
Yeah, pushing myself outside of my comfort zone. So I actually started studying public relations, which now you can see how it's kind of served me. Yeah. But I was an art minor and I just was spending all my time in the art class. So I decided to quit public relations and pursue a BFA in painting. And I'm so happy that I did that. Mm-hmm. And from there, I went and studied at Boston University to get my MFA in painting, where I studied with some amazing individuals like John Walker, Dana Frankfurt, and met such a great group of artists to study with, and many of whom I'm still in contact with and have really supported me as an artist. In fact, that's who I ended up starting Musa Collective with, was two artists from that time. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I bounced around a lot. So I've lived in Brooklyn. I've lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I worked for a few years. I moved back to Boston, and that's where Musa was started. And then I moved to Columbus, Ohio last year with my husband and two kids. And right when we moved is when I started I Like Your Work podcast.
Mm. And mm-hmm. that was 2018.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. I'm like, what year is it?
Yeah. I know, right?
I'm already ahead in 2020, which, you know, this episode might be released in 2020, but I'm like already thinking that way because, I just think ahead, like what is, which is not always a good thing, but.
Well, I feel like when you're podcasting and also when you're an artist, I mean, you know, you're thinking 2 years ahead for shows or curating things. So yeah.
It's hard to like reorient yourself sometimes because you're always thinking about what is to come, which is not always a good thing. But anyway, that's so interesting. I like that you've had multiple life experiences in different locations and, you know, living in cities and coming back to Ohio. And I don't know, it's just interesting to hear. You know, I might ask you a little bit more later how you decided to like move back and what that was about. But because, you know, I think there's this like, if you're an artist, you got to be in on the East Coast, you got to be in, you know, an art mecca, and it can be hard, can feel isolating to not be so.
100%. And I would love to talk about that because, to be honest, it was a struggle for me to make that move because, like you and like a lot of listeners, we are fed this idea that you have to be in New York or you have to be in LA to make it as an artist. And of course, what we're finding out is that's just not true.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways to be an artist, there's a lot of ways to be a successful artist. And following these outdated ideas of regionalism is just, it doesn't serve everyone.
That's right. Okay, Erica, before we keep going, I want to, you know, I always like to have this vision of people picturing your work as they can listen to the interview. So I like to, you know, second open with this question of like, tell us what your work looks like. What is your painting process like and what materials do you use, and kind of give us an idea of, you know, what your paintings look like.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, so I am an oil painter. And since 2015, I've primarily been working on panels, and I've always been interested in color. So highly saturated color is definitely a part of my work. And right now I'm working kind of like mid-scale, although I guess I do have a 6-foot painting I'm working on right now.
So, nice.
You know, when I had my first kid, I went down in scale and was working pretty small. And now that they're older and I have a little bit more time, I'm getting back up to like 4 by 6 feet. But I work in a series typically. And right now I have 2 series that I'm working on. And one of them is primarily still life. So I'm really inspired by what I bring into my studio space. So I will have photos of my kids or images of artwork that I'm looking at. I will print images off the internet from like news sources of news that I find really striking. And I'll pin those up in my studio and hang things from my wall. And then from there, I'm able to kind of pull a composition or something that I find interesting, and I'll start to paint from that. And I've really been interested in making these kind of wall still lives for a few years now. And I something that really attracts me to them is by being able to build the composition with shadows as well. So it's not just the objects, but also how the value is going to move you around the space. And I work actually really thin. I used to be a really thick painter, you know, like where your paintings are like 8 pounds.
Right.
And since I've started working on panel, I really thinned out my paint, and I love it. I love how the light bounces through the pigment, hits the gesso, the white of the canvas or the panel, and bounces back. So that is one series that I'm working on. And then the other series is, I'm calling them the Watchers right now, and they're partially still life paintings. But what I do is I build an armature and I cover it in, you know, flowers, like fake flowers, and I'll paint from them and kind of start to create these figures that kind of speak to spirituality, to the feminine, to environmental concerns. And this is a really new series that I just started, and I'm still in the process of figuring out what they mean to me exactly, but it's been such an exciting beginning for these new paintings.
That's interesting. As you're talking, I'm like kind of flipping through your, you know, the yearly categories of your work that you have on your website, and notice that, like, I think it's the 2016 or 2017 tab is where you have a lot of those paintings that you're talking about, like with the, you know, interiors, like images pinned up on a wall and playing with shadow. Certainly there's like themes of light and shadow and composition, you know, that are very strong throughout all of your work. But like, you know, kind of thinking about how you're playing with, you know, darkness and light. And it's just interesting to look through the work and see kind of what you were painting, you know, 3 years ago and how it's like circling back around in ways. It seems like, you know, the outdoor landscape and the natural environment is very influential in your work too. You know, like looking at some of these scenes of like the night sky and the cosmos. And I love the painting of, I think you have like desert bonfire. It's like the scene at a desert. There's just a few of your paintings that really stick in my mind that feel like really powerful for whatever reason. They just feel like these very pivotal moments, which is cool. I like that you kind of think through, you know, not just like the composition of the work, but also like thematically what is happening in the scene. And they feel like these very big, like, you know, this was the night that I discovered something. Like an enlightening, like an enlightening moment. Does that make sense?
Yes. And thank you. And I love hearing that reading, because that's kind of what was happening when I was making these paintings, because my work really changed when I had my first child. Mm-hmm. So before that, I'd spent about 10 years making abstract paintings. And I always knew I wanted to go back to the figure, but I was like kind of becoming known for making more abstract work. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of struggling, like, oh, you know, I'm going to make this pivot. And is that going to be good for me? And of course, what I should have realized is you just need to go with that gut feeling and, mm-hmm. and follow your intuition. But I did. I struggled with it. And so when I had my daughter, I started doing these drawings, self-portraits to kind of show, you know, the progression of my pregnancy and drawing my family members. And that really brought me back to the figure. And so I'm so happy for that transition. It felt very seamless in a way. Mm-hmm. And so I started really trying to explore the feminine and, like I said, the spiritual and this idea of women gathering at a bonfire. Mm-hmm. Or like, how can you express that through a painting?
Yeah, you just got to paint it.
right? So where they came from.
Yeah, I love that too. I also, like, I think it's refreshing to, like, you know, just see that you are willing to, you know, I don't even want to say jump around like a bit, but like, I feel like I'm saying something negative, which is so stupid. Like, it's okay to jump around, you know, to different ideas. But I think we have this perception in the art world that like, we're known for this one thing and we have to like stick with this, you know, theme that we've carried so that we can look back in 30 years and say that I am the desert bonfire painter, you know, like, and we kind of like put ourselves in this box in a way. And it's just nice to like see you taking risks and making new work and not in a way that like feels trite, like you're just jumping around loosey goosey. It feels very intentional and purposeful. Like you're really deeply exploring, you know, what you want your paintings to be about. I just really appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. And I think that right there is what led me to trying to think in various, having a various series going, mm-hmm. because I was always afraid to change what I was doing. And like you said, I feel like in the art world, it can be really looked down upon, or seen as like, you need to have one thing that you do and you do it consistently for decades, you know? I think for so many of us right now, that really doesn't suit our contemporary time, where we have so much information mm-hmm. coming towards us, right? So like blog posts, podcasts, okay. you know, Instagram, stories on the news, images that we're able to see. And I think that's really, the digestion of images has really changed how a lot of us approach our work, because there are so many new ideas that we can explore. And as creative mm-hmm. people, we get really excited, you know, to move into those. So to organize my thoughts, I really had to think, okay, like, here's a series of flowers that I'm going to work on. Here's a series of women in the outdoors. Here's a series of flower bearers. That was a big series for mm-hmm. me for a couple years. And I tend to return to them. Those seem to be like my big themes mm-hmm. that I find interesting. And yeah, I continue to go back to them. And it makes me think of Stanley Lewis. He once said, and this was years ago, he told me this, He said, you're going to spend the rest of your career remembering things that you forgot. Mm. And it's so true. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be like a certain way of mixing a color or, you know, like some of the stuff that I'm making now, I'm like, oh my God, I was making this like 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, cause yeah. I think it's like, we think we have these concepts and ideas that are outside of ourselves, like we're discovering something and, you know, we get to explore it and mine it and learn about it. But I think really it's, you know, so much more autobiographical than we realize. Like, and, you know, it's only until we like have years behind us that can like see how much this relates to us, you know, mm-hmm. That then we look back and we're like, oh, like, duh, this is why, you know, there's these similar themes in my work. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's just interesting. So walk me through a little bit, like, you know, it sounds like you kind of conceptualize an idea for a body of work and then you go about executing and making that work. So I would love to hear you talk a little bit about like, not only how you come up with those ideas, because I think like kind of we just said, like some of those things are just thematic things that are related to you and your experience in life. But like, practically, like, what do you do to, you know, are you jotting ideas in a notebook? And then do you spend time going back through and like doing some research and writing? Like kind of before you begin painting a body of work, what is the work that's happening behind the scenes, both mentally and practically? And then maybe you could talk a little bit about like some of the things that happen after you start a body and you're like, I thought all of these paintings were going to look like this, but they're starting to take this turn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd love to talk about that. And I think it's such a great question. So a lot of the work for my paintings is physical in my studio space. Mm. So I'm always, like I said, I'm moving around images on the wall, or like I have a blue jay feather that I found when I was in Boston with my daughter, and I have that hanging on my wall. And rocks that my daughter and son collected for me on our walks. And so those are kind of on a ledge that I have up against my wall. So I'm always kind of like reorienting these things and looking at it. And then they'll kind of click into an image that I'm like, that right there is what I want to paint. Mm. So like right now I'm working on, it was actually from an IKEA piece of furniture that we bought for my daughter's room. And it comes with the instruction manual. And on the front, it had just like, it's literally just like it looks like a square or rectangle of some sort. But I turned it on its side and kind of drew over it and then put a piece of fabric. And I like the geometry of it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working from that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it has to do with just like the physical manipulation of where I'm at. Occasionally I will have ideas for paintings when I am just out and about in the world. And I used to carry a sketchbook with me, but now what I do is I actually just like jump on my iPhone mm-hmm. or on an iPad, and I go into like a brushes app of some sort and I'll just like quickly sketch it in there. Mm,
that's great.
I've started this new painting, and the idea for it came to me when I was stopping at like a rest stop on the way to do a studio visit. And I was walking back and just, you know, not even really thinking about anything. And then like this image came to me and I was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. that's going to be like my next painting. And I actually have a lot of ideas when I'm driving, because I feel like it's one of those moments where you get to just think, yeah. You know, you don't have to talk or you don't have to listen to anything unless my kids are going crazy in the back. Right. And that's a different experience. But that's typically how I kind of come up with ideas for my work. And then I go about, you know, starting the painting, and I don't really do that many thumbnails unless I'm, like I said, out in the world and have an idea. I just really start with some thin paint and drawing. And because I'm typically having information come to me from life, so working from life, it's really easy for me to kind of correct and let the painting kind of lead me as I'm responding to the objects around me. I was actually trained from observation. That was like my mm-hmm. background. It was a ton of like, you know, self-portraits, mm-hmm. a ton of nude figures being in there. So it's working from observation is kind of like my meditative space where I can just kind of let it fly, respond, not too much thinking once I'm getting into the process, except for responding to what's going on there. So that's nice.
I love hearing you talk about that. It's just like, this is why I love podcasting, is just getting inside the artist's brain and like, and just like practically, how do you make it work? Like, when do your best ideas come and what are you using to write them down? Like, I just think that's so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
okay, Erica. So I know you've talked a little bit about this, like with some other guests on your podcast and stuff, but, you know, one thing that's like very specific about my podcast is talking about the overlap of identity of being an artist and a parent, specifically being a mother and giving voices to women in that conversation. So I just kind of want you to talk a little bit about like maybe some experiences that you've had, whether either you've been encouraged in your work as a parent and an artist, or maybe where you felt resistance and like where you felt like maybe this isn't the best idea. Because I know you've had that, you know, a few of these conversations with guests on your podcast and just talking about like people in their life that told them they couldn't make it work as an artist and parent. And obviously you have, you know, chosen to do both. And so talk to me a little bit about your experience.
Yeah. So after I finished my MFA and I was living in New York, I started to think that I would possibly want a family. And to be honest, I really felt like the message that was being conveyed to me and my peers, mostly women, was you couldn't do this. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have kids and be an artist. And I really felt that. I mean, I struggled with this internally. And I, now that I've had kids and I can reflect on it, I'm like, ugh, all that stress that I didn't need to have, you know? But I mean, I really felt it. And so did my friends. And we would talk about it in a very roundabout way. Nobody would come up and just say, I want to have kids. Like nobody I knew said that. Mm-hmm. But we would kind of hint at, well, you know, did you know so-and-so is pregnant or something like that, you know? And it felt very unhealthy, this conversation that was being fed to us about the choices that women have to make. I mean, you know, Abramovich, she just recently had that, you know, essay that she released. I guess it's been like 3 or 4 years ago now, but that was right when I had my first child, about why there hasn't been any great women artists, and it's because they have families, which is such bullshit. Hopefully I can say that here. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you can.
It makes me so angry. Because this is what's limiting women. So anyway, I did a lot of self-reflection and I decided, you know what? I really want to have a family. I'm going to pursue both. I'm going to do both. And so, you know, I got pregnant with my first child, Kaya. And there was also a lot of processing that I went through. I actually had a sketchbook that was in a show in Boston. It's called Hall Space. And it was titled Artist Mama, and I continued to document my pregnancy, like so doing drawings from observation of me up till giving birth, and then also drawings right after. And there was a lot of writing in that piece. I typically don't write a lot with my work, but this one I did, about, you know, fears I had, about the things I was realizing, though. And I have a page in it right after I have my daughter where it says, you know, people say that you change completely after you have your child, and you do in some ways, you know, the capacity for me, you know, to love, of course, I'm a very loving person, but you know how it is with your kids. But another part of you doesn't change. Like I'm still really driven. I'm still a painter. I'm still an artist. And so I wanted to remind myself and others that, you know, you still have your drive to be a creative person if that's who you are. And so I actually made more paintings after I had my daughter than I had in the previous year or two. And I think partially it was me like, I'm going to prove all of these people wrong. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
You know, and for better or worse. And so I set up a three-person show for when my daughter was 8 months, and all the work that was in that show, I created after she was born. And I was really proud of myself for that. I wish I didn't feel like I had to prove myself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wish we as women didn't feel like we always had to prove ourselves. But I did feel that pressure, and I did it, and I do love the work. That was the Flower Bearer series. That's when I started that.
That's awesome. I love what you said about, like, you know, we think that we're just going to transform and change into this new person. And, you know, like, you hear a lot of conversation about how the experience of birth does that. And it's not that a part of you isn't born, but it's like, you also are just you still, you know?
And exactly. Like, you still have the things that you like and don't like, right. And, you know, your passion for your career, mm-hmm. and, you know, things of course will shift, but the core of you, I think, you know, that's who you are. So.
Well, yeah. And too, it reminds me of, like, women I know that, like, have become so consumed by motherhood that, and, you know, for various reasons, because they don't have good support, or, like, you know, that they aren't from a background that, like, culturally allows them to do anything else. But just thinking about how, like, then when their children are grown, like, they kind of aren't really sure who they are anymore. And that part of that, it just always baffled me. I'm like, how can you not know who you are? But also, like, I get it, because, you know, it's just this, like, huge thing. And if you're not very intentional about maintaining, you know, Erica pre-motherhood, it's like, it can be all consuming, and it goes out the window. And then suddenly, you know, 30 years later, you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there is this pressure to be that sacrificing mm-hmm. mother, you yeah. know? In fact, I think that there's a lot of similarities between, like, the artist mindset and the mom mindset, yes. like, as what an artist should be. An artist should sacrifice everything for their yes. art, you know? Yes. And it's the same thing with motherhood. You're supposed to sacrifice everything for your kids. And there has to be balance. I mean, there just has to be, for you to be a healthy artist, a healthy mother, a healthy human being, and be able to keep giving to your art and keep giving to your kids. You know, you can't do that when you're completely running on empty.
Mm, no, it's so true. Mm-hmm. And what about now? Like, do you feel like things are changing a little bit? Do you still feel like, I know you've opened up many conversations with people on your podcast about parenting, and you very, like, if you know they're a parent, you very specifically ask them about that. Have you ever felt, like, I don't know, weird doing that? Or, you know, are there certain people that you know that you wouldn't ask, you know, about that?
That's a really great question, I think. Through the conversations that I've had on the podcast with parents, I think, number one, the conversation is opening up, where more people are willing to talk about their personal lives when it comes to family. Mm-hmm. And what I've realized is, originally I only talked to women about their background as a parent. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, I can't remember, I think I was having a conversation in passing with a friend who was an artist and a dad. And they were like, yeah, you know, I've kind of had this experience and this experience. And I thought, oh my God, like, wait, you guys are kind of going through something similar. I mean, mm-hmm. it's different, but it's similar. And so I have started asking men. So, like, you know, Kim Dorland was on the podcast, and he's a parent, and I was just shocked to hear his story as well. You know, he's an extremely successful artist. He's extremely well known, you know, shows internationally. And, you know, that he had some bias for being an artist parent. Mm-hmm. And the more I talk about it with people, the more I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I think through what you are doing with your amazing podcast, mm-hmm. you know, through Carve Out Time for Art, what they're doing for women, I mean, and men even, it's just really, I think, allowing parenthood in the arts to be more widely accepted. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for the future generations of artists, because I think, you know, when I had my daughter, there wasn't the Artist Mother podcast. Mm-hmm. There wasn't Carve Out Time for Art yet. And so it's crazy how much it seems to have transitioned in just 5 years.
Yeah, it is. And too, I think, like, you know, I was just thinking as you were talking about, like, how, you know, there's other careers that also are very influenced by parenting, or you know, feel some resistance to parenting. But, and so I'm like, why artists? And I'm like, it's because we're supposed to be the ones to like make the change, you know, like yeah. we want to be the ones who form a sustainable model. And if we can't even do it within the arts, like, what are we saying? Like, we're, you know, we're already people who, you know, like we already have to defend what we do. And so as is this important? Is this like, does this bring beauty and truth to the world? Is this work that matters? You know, and I think if you within that structure, like are putting up walls against people being completely themselves and, you know, having spaces that are not allowing children to be present. And, you know, it's just like, what are we saying? That yes. It can't happen anywhere if it can't happen in the art world, you know?
I think that's such a great point because artists are the change makers in so many ways, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we can't accept, you know, parents and children, like who else is really going to mm-hmm. be accepting them in there? And we're so, we have flexibility to a certain degree as well. So yeah, we need to make it happen.
I am so pleased to share information about our sponsor for this episode, Globe Inn. Globe Inn is a monthly subscription of fair trade goods from all around the world. They provide beautiful, inspiring artisan boxes that are shipped right to your door, and these boxes contain a curated collection of handmade items for you and your home. These can include everything from Moroccan ceramics to hand-woven Mexican baskets, tea, coffee, and other goodies and food items for your home. I actually got the cozy box recently with a hand-painted mug. It came with hot chocolate and several other things. It's so beautiful. I loved it so much. The special thing about this company is that every purchase supports artisans in remote communities. Globe Inn is a verified member of the Fair Trade Federation, which means they pay artisans a reliable wage that covers all of their basic needs and more. Every product is connected to powerful stories of the artisans who created them, and you can read all about these stories in a little booklet that comes in your box every month. It's a beautiful little pamphlet that you get to read and flip through and see who you're supporting by purchasing this item. Every month, Globe Inn has 4 to 5 brand new box themes that you can choose as your monthly selection. They also make available many of their previous bestsellers, or if you prefer to be surprised, Globe Inn will choose a box for you. You also have the option of customizing your subscription box. You can actually select redeem and put your box credit towards individual fair trade goods that are on sale in their monthly add-on section. Every month, Globe Inn also has an artisan fund where they raise money for one of the artisan groups they partner with for programs they request, like education or building projects or other things. Globe Inn has a really active community of like-minded women who are looking to shop more ethically, and you can actually join this group by finding the Mavens community on Facebook. It has over 10,000 members, so there's certainly someone you can connect with there. Globe Inn is a monthly subscription which costs $40 per month, but get this, if you pay in advance for the year, your subscription fee actually comes down to $33 a month, and the items in this box more than make up for the cost. You can skip a box or cancel anytime. So go check out globein.com, that's GLOBIN.com, to see this incredible company who are supporting artisan workers all across the globe. Their products are inspiring, beautiful, and ethical. They would make a great gift for a friend or a subscription for yourself to enjoy every month. Thank you, Globe Inn, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. I appreciate you. Okay, so thinking too, like just practically, Erica, how is all of this working for you? I kind of want to talk a little bit about podcasting. I'm going to ask you some more specific questions about I Like Your Work, but just like practically, you know, you are a very busy woman. You're pursuing so much, your own career. Now you have a podcast, and I know you also like work, you jury shows, you do portfolio reviews for, you know, certain institutions, I think, and just like, and your kids are pretty young. How old are your kids?
So my daughter is 4 and just started preschool this year, and my son is 2.
Okay. So like practically, what does a day in the life, or maybe a week in the life of Erica look like? Like what, you know, what does your partner do and how are you guys like making this sustainable? Are you feeling burnout? Like what is happening in, you know, in the real life of Erica Hess?
Yes. No, I think this is a wonderful question. So I did this solo podcast. I've only done one of them. And in it, I talk about flexible sustainability. And what I meant with that is basically the process that I think a lot of artists go through and also in turn becoming parents, which is there has to be a certain degree of flexibility in order to sustain your art practice and also just exist in motherhood. You got to be a little flexible.
Yeah.
So my life really transitioned after I had kids. Like I said, I was working full time before that at Mass Art in Boston in the admissions. So I'd been doing admissions for a few years, and that meant traveling frequently, like every weekend. And of course, I wasn't going to be able to do that after I had a kid. So what I did, and this is kind of funny, as I was transitioning out of my full-time job, I built a website to do consulting for portfolio reviews. Mm. I've always had some type of work or gig, you know. I did consulting in my 20s. I used to build websites for artists. So I've always been one of those people that kind of
as a side hustle.
Yeah. Side hustle or even main hustle for a little while, which was crazy because this is back in the day of Dreamweaver. But anyway, so I built this consulting website and my friend called it my beard job, you know, like because I didn't want to have a gap on my resume I decided to be going back full time. But that beard job actually kind of took off and I would get, you know, I would get emails for people requesting that I help their son or daughter build their portfolio to apply to BFA programs. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was doing as a job. And it wasn't a lot of income, you know. We were living off of my husband's income. He works in the engineering world of math, and it's very, very different from my world. And so the money that was really coming in, I was able to find a nanny share. And to all of you moms with young kids out there, the nanny share was the best thing that could have happened. Because we didn't want to do full-time daycare,
right?
Because that would have taken my entire paycheck, my full-time paycheck. So a nanny share is where you get together with a family or two and you split the cost of a nanny for, like, for me, it started out as one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that has slowly built and changed as I started to take on more projects and was able to have more of an income through what I was doing. So, currently, what my life kind of looks like is I do consulting for a place called ArtsBridge. So I review portfolios and work with clients there where I review portfolios. And I also review portfolios for certain higher ed institutes for their BFA programs. And then, of course, I am painting. I've started curating a lot of shows.
Yeah, because I like your work has really taken off. You know, the opportunities are, I know, are opening up for that, which we'll talk to a little bit later. But just like I know firsthand, like podcasting is a lot of work. And like, if that was all you were doing, I think people would be impressed, you know, alongside painting and to also have multiple other things that you're responsible for. I'm sure, you know, a lot's on your plate.
Yeah. It is. I find that really doing well with time management is important for juggling a lot of things. And I don't think that everybody should go out and work like four jobs or something like that. Mm-hmm. If that's your personality and that works for you, more power to you. But if not, you know, that's fine too. In fact, I'm planning on scaling back this next year. Like I'm going to probably stop consulting and stop reviewing portfolios because I feel like the podcast and my artwork is at a place where I just need to be focusing on that and family, of course, you know, that time. So again, that's where I think the idea of flexibility is really important. There's times where you can handle doing more and there's times where you have to put up some boundaries and say, you know, I can't do that right now. And this is what is the most important thing. And I'm still learning that, to be totally honest.
Yeah, me too.
yeah, it can be hard, right? Like, you know, Artist Mother podcast is doing so well and you're like, oh, I want it to continue to grow. You know, but there's times where it's like, well, maybe I just need to let it, you know, just exist as it is and then do another push at another time, you know?
Yeah. Those are totally things I'm thinking through, you know, even to just like reflecting on my own work over the past year and like what I accomplished and what, you know, I fell short on and how like the podcast is sort of feeding into my energy, you know, like what am I prioritizing and what's coming first and what, you know, cause I think too, like the podcast, maybe you feel this way. In some ways the podcast work is like easier work. Cause it's like, I can just hop on Instagram and promote stuff and, you know, I can pull out my computer. Whereas like, okay, I need 3 hours to get to the studio and, you know, I gotta get ready and get in the mindset and get in the flow. And I don't know, it's like, it requires this different level of commitment in terms of like work. And so, you know, when I'm stressed and like the kids are crazy and like doing the podcast work in some ways is a little bit easier for me. And staying committed to like my painting practice and, you know, my own career as an artist is like, it takes more prioritizing, if that makes sense. So totally. I want to be better about that, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard, I think, when there are different responsibilities and different things that we love to do. And I once talked to this artist. I worked for her when I was in New York, Shirley Kaneda. She's a fantastic artist. And she kind of had seasons that she worked through. You know, she's always painting, but there was like, you know, her teaching season or then a traveling season. And I think for us as artists and, you know, as podcasters, mothers, whatever job that we have, it's important to think that way sometimes, because it can be like, for me, my summers are spent painting because I'm not podcasting in the summers. I decided to take that time off. And I was scared to do that. You guys, I was like, nobody's going to listen when I come back, you know, and that wasn't true. You know, people came back and listened and I was able to paint all summer. And, yeah, just trying to think like, okay, fall, I'm really getting back into podcast swing. Maybe winter I can get into my studio more, but I totally understand what you're saying, right? Like making sure we prioritize the things that need to get done because there's a lot of things sometimes.
Yeah. And like, ultimately I don't want to be a podcaster. I mean, I do, like, I love podcasting, but I want to be known for being an artist, you know, and for being a painter. And I think, if I can also, you know, be a podcaster and this community facilitator alongside that, like, that is amazing. And it feeds this other part of me, you know, that is very social and wants to connect, but, you know, it's not my main priority, but I think in the practical everyday of life, you know, so many of us just struggle making the time and committing to our practice, in a way that feels sustainable. And so I think it just takes a lot of intention to plan and commit to it. Erica, I want to hear you. Like, it's just fun to like be asking you questions because you're always the one interviewing other people. So I want to hear you talk a little bit more about the podcast and like, you know, how, like, what, why you started it, and maybe that has something to do with your location, maybe not. You know, how you choose guests, like, how are you curating? You know, because to me, like, a podcast is curating, right? Like, you're deciding whose work you find interesting and who you want to have on your show. And so, like, hearing you talk a little bit about that, I think would be interesting. And maybe, like, just what has changed, like, as you, from what you started with and, you know, all the ways that, like, I Like Your Work has opened up for you now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the idea for I Like Your Work came out of creating Musa Collective. So Musa Collective is in Boston, Massachusetts, and I co-founded it 2 years ago with, Julia Von Metch Ramos and Kristen Waldman. And we'd gone to grad school together, and we thought we wanted to have a place where artists could share their work. So we built this collective of 13 artists, and we would cycle through each a month with a different artist showing their work. And part of it was to also have an artist talk. And it was such a wonderful experience for me. I really loved running part of it, being involved, being a core member. And after about a year and a half of doing that, my family and I, we decided we were going to relocate to be closer to my mom and my sister in Ohio, where I'd grown up. And as I was deciding to transition out of Musa, I thought, I really want to keep this dialogue up with artists. And in my studio, I listened to tons of podcasts. Like, that's what I would listen to when I was painting. And I really felt compelled to start talking to more artists. I wanted to build community. I've always been interested in community. One of my favorite places to be is in an artist studio. It's where I feel the most comfortable. You know, artists are my people, and they always have been. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought, oh, man, I should start this podcast. And so I actually went over to my friend Nina Bellucci. She's an amazing painter in Boston. I went over to her house. She has two kids. And I was telling her, I'm like, yeah, you know, we're going to move to Columbus, Ohio in a few months. And I'm thinking about maybe starting a podcast next year. I don't know. And she like was pouring coffee for me. And she's like, well, why don't you start it now? And I was like, maybe she's right. Like, why am I waiting? So I literally went home, bought a cheap mic, and started contacting friends at first to say, hey, you want to be on this podcast? I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, can I come to your studio? And it was awesome because it just started out as a way to reconnect with my friends and talk about their work. And so that was how it started. Mm. And I also thought that this was going to be a way for me to meet new artists in Columbus, you know, like, hey, I would love to hang out with you. Mm-hmm. Could you be on my podcast? But interestingly enough, it's connected me more to artists that are in rural areas and also than in art hubs like, you know, New York, LA, Miami. And that's been really fascinating to me. And yeah, it's been great because there's certain artists whose work I like and love,
right,
who I've reached out to, and they have been very open to having me in their space. So, you know, Joanne Greenbaum, she's an artist who, oh my God, she's just amazing to me. I love her work. She's incredible. And, you know, I got to go to her studio and talk to her and see her work in person. And that was just really amazing. Kim Dorland, artist that I've really loved for a long time, Tomari Dodge. And so the way that I kind of curate the show is literally just, you know, thinking about artists whose work I'm interested in or curious about or have always liked and reaching out to them. And I'm trying to bring in more artists who also can, like I had Bridget Mayer on here, and she's a gallerist and she's writing books and she helps artists. So trying to find guests like that as well, because I think artists are interested in hearing from them and from their professional viewpoints, how they can build their practice or build their career. So I try to bring in individuals like that. And then I actually find a lot of new artists to talk to through these open calls that we're having and the studio visit aspect of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I've probably brought on like 5 or 6 people through that, because you can only see so much artwork. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're reaching, trying to find. So when people come to you, it's really helpful.
Yeah, no, totally. We had an open call last year, or I guess this year. I've only been doing this 1 year. Feels like forever, but
I know, right?
Yeah, but you just you just realize how, you know, like, you think you're doing a good job of like researching new people, and you are, like, it takes a lot of work to like find, you know, especially for me, because my window is much more narrow than yours. It's like they have to be a female and they have to be a parent, you know?
Yep.
And sometimes those things are hard to know even. And I feel creepy asking, like, are you a mom? I love your work. Are you a mom? Can I talk to you?
That's funny. I love that.
But, you know, like, I just think I've been grateful for the ways that, like, open call and like other, you know, like, communication platforms like yours and other things that have opened up, that like bring people to me in a way, you know. It's like, 'cause I can't possibly do all the work of like, you know, curating and bringing on all the diversity and all the range of people that I want to. But it's hard. Like, I definitely see too, like my show is, I have a lot of painters because I'm a painter. Yeah. And that's the work I'm interested in. And like, I know you do too. And that's some of the criticism I've gotten is like, get more, you know, people from outside other media. And it's just a challenge for me because I don't know a lot of people outside of painters. And so that just takes more time and work and networking. And, you know, all of that is work too that goes into the podcast and takes my energy and time. So I'm not saying that as an excuse, but just to say like, it's natural for it to be about painting mostly because that's who I know. And I'm hoping that the circles keep widening out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things like you are making this show and it's the artist's mother and, you know, you're the personality that's kind of running it in your background. And so, again, it goes back to we all have certain interests or things that we are naturally attracted to. You're a painter. I'm a painter. Painting is my language. Mm-hmm. And I do try to bring other artists in, but I also feel like Instagram is kind of where I live for I Like Your Work. Mm-hmm. Like that's where I'm at. That's where I'm posting stuff. And that's where I find new artists a lot of times. And Instagram seems to lend itself very well to painting, mm-hmm. Rather than like video, you know, or even installation work. And there's a lot of photo out there too, but there's almost so much photo that mm-hmm. it's hard to wade through all of it. But yeah, it does take a lot of time. And I think that's where those jury calls or things like that are really helpful because people can come to you. And I've been blown away. We had our first jury call, gosh, just this year. We just closed the show. And so many great artists. I've been highlighting and starring a lot of people that I'm looking into their work. Not just for the show, but I'm starting to curate a lot of shows outside of I Like Your Work. And mm-hmm. so I have all over I have a board where I pin things in my studio. And there's lists of artists' names and all that stuff. Because you have to start organizing all this information,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. How did you decide to like do an exhibition for I Like Your Work? And like what has changed you know, since you started the podcast for you in terms of like what this community can be?
Yeah, great question. So it was actually not my idea to do the open call. The artist, Michaelin Mikola, she is also an artist mom. Has she been on your show? I think she was on your show. Oh, you should look her up. She's great.
Yeah.
And she's got two kids. And she approached me and said, hey, I'm part of this artist collective in Dayton, Ohio, and I'd like to use my slot to have a juried, you know, a curated show. So would you come in? And I said, yeah, I'd love to, you know. So mm-hmm. we just kind of ran with it and put together this open call. And we ended up having, I think it was 42 artists in the space. And because we had so many applicants, I wanted to put some people online, you know, mm-hmm. so you can actually go onto the website, ilikeyourwork.com/belong. And you can see not just the artists that were in the show, but an additional 30 artists that we selected to highlight on the website. And people really responded to this. And this is kind of how I've run the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's like, what do artists need? What do artists want? And the number one thing that I've noticed is, of course, they want to hear these conversations, but they're also looking for ways to get their work out there. So mm-hmm. I thought if I could have that on here as well, I'll do that. So that's also why the studio visit artist started. Like, so I highlight an artist on our website and in the newsletter and on social media once a week. And we call them the studio visit artists. And it's just another way to get more people's work out there.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice too to like, you know, you're creating this podcast that's a resource for people, but also like it's bloomed into creating opportunities too, you know, that are more tangible and like have more teeth to them. I think that's something that I've been inspired by seeing what you're doing and, you know, have like similar visions for the Artist Mother podcast. Like we have our first exhibition coming up in 2020 and
With Allison Remus, right?
Yeah. Allison is
amazing.
Jurying the show. I'm super excited about it. And I just think that like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where like, until you are engaged in doing, like you just never know what ideas you're going to have and like what's going to open up and who's going to email you and say like, hey, I love what you're doing. Like, let's do this? Are you interested in this project? Like, I mean, that's one of the things that's just been so exciting about this experience doing the podcast is like the ways that things have just like opened up, like, you know, really like just putting yourself out there, you know?
Like, oh, 100%. 100%. It's just amazing. And it can be a lot of fun. Like I've always wanted to treat the podcast as something that was fun for me to do. And occasionally I'll start to get really stressed out and I'm like, Erica, pull it back. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this is something you're doing to build community. And also, you know, just create opportunities and be really, again, flexible with it. And so I think it's interesting how these things can transform just based on like what listeners or artists really want and responding to that. And that's what I think both of us are doing. And you had that retreat. Oh mm-hmm. my gosh. It's like, way to go. That looks so cool. What you were doing.
It was life-changing. Like I'm still processing it, and I know I will be for years to come, but it was, I mean, I think there was like something magical about it being the first retreat too. Like we're all really like, what is this? Like what, you know, like, mm-hmm. but just that, like, there was just nothing like being in a space where, I don't know, like everybody just felt seen for, you know, both being an artist and a parent. And that was just like really refreshing. And just like, to see that, like, it's one thing to talk about it online, but, you know, I think to like have that experience in person was just like amazing. I can't stop thinking about it.
Oh, that's so great. I love it.
So, all right, Erica, this has been so fun. I have loved, you know, hearing just all the things like about your life and your practice, how motherhood, I liked how you talked about in the beginning, how like your painting practice specifically changed very much after you became a mom. And I appreciate you opening up about that. So I always close my interview with 5 questions, just for us to get to know you a little better. And I would love if you would share with us what you're currently reading.
Yes. So I have discovered that I like to read multiple books at once. I say I'm like a poly reader. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm 10 years behind the curve and I'm reading The 4-Hour Workweek in order to kind of streamline some stuff that I'm doing with podcasts and with all of that part of my life. Mm. And I'm actually, this is kind of embarrassing to share, but I'm reading Sylvia Brown's biography.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. I found that we have a Goodwill right beside our house and they always have such fantastic and bizarro books. And so I always go in and we'll just pick up like weird books that I'm like, huh, I wouldn't really ever buy this or like, you know, seek it out. But it's pretty fascinating. I'm not going to lie.
That's great. It's fun. I love that. That's like your freak flag. I'm reading the.
Oh yeah. 100%. It's really, really hilarious and interesting. Another book that I finished that Hannah Cole, who she's an artist and she helps artists with taxes, she recommended was the Art of Money. And I just read that too. And that was really good.
That's great. I have another friend who I've seen, like I wanted to borrow that book from my friend and I had forgotten about it. So I need to, I need to get back into it because she told me it was a really good book too. okay. What are you currently watching or listening to? But, I think,
I'm currently watching anything on Amazon Prime that has to do with interior design.
Isn't there a new British show? It's like,
yes,
what's it called? It's like the Great British Baking Show, but like an interior design challenge.
I think I just literally watched that. I cannot remember the name of it, but it was really interesting. I watched a British one and now I'm watching one that's set in Ireland and it's Irish interior designers. I find it just really calming. Mm-hmm. Like I can sit now. It's kind of related to art, but like in a parallel way.
Right.
So it doesn't feel like work, which sometimes I hate to say it, but sometimes, you know, art can start to feel a little bit like work and I need to turn my brain off. And yeah, I watch people pick out wallpaper colors.
Yes. I love it. Okay, Erica, what would you do if you had a whole weekend to yourself?
If I had a whole weekend to myself and let's say like unlimited funds, I would be on a beach and I would read a bunch of books and I would swim and I would sleep and that would probably
that sounds ideal.
I know, right?
Yeah. I love it. Okay. And what is your beverage of choice?
coffee and LaCroix, the grapefruit kind.
Yeah, I like the grapefruit one. That's good. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Erica, and I always like to close with, you know, just giving you an opportunity to share a thank you for someone who supported you in your work.
So many people. And so I would have to say, I have to give a shout out to my mom who's helped me with childcare, which is amazing. And she's wonderful. And then also to the artists, Rebecca Sargent for being such a good friend, Nina Bellucci, Elizabeth Mooney, both wonderful artist parents. And they've really kind of shown me, how you can be an artist parent. I've really looked to them as mentors and they're also just fantastic artists. And Julia Von Metsch and Chrislyn Waldman for being fantastic artists, friends, and parents as well. Mm.
Thank you, Erica. This has been really great. And it's, like I said earlier, it's just fun to kind of turn the mic on you a little bit and hear about your life. I appreciate all that you do for artists and just building up the art community in a way that feels transparent and real. So thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. That truly means the world to me. And thank you for what you do. You do so much. And it's just been such a pleasure to be on here. So thank you.
Yes, thanks.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.